Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
History was made in Carver Hawkeye Arena on Sunday as Caitlin Clark surpassed Pete Maravich for the most points in major college basketball history. David Eichel, Sean Bach, HawkeyeInsider.com. Sean, it's been a really just interesting basketball season. Obviously, the Iowa women have kind of regained their traction after beating number two Ohio State in front of a celebrity-riddled Carver Hawkeye Arena. Really, really amazing atmosphere. We'll get into that in a little bit, but I want to start with men's basketball because it's been really impressive to watch how this team's turned around this season. I mean, you think back to the loss against Michigan. You think back to that really bad loss at this point to Maryland at home. You think back to when they started out 0-3 in Big Ten play, and they were getting not just close losses. They were getting their butts handed to them. And you kind of thought that the season could have derailed a little bit, but I was a little bit pessimistic. You were too, but I think you were the one who said, stick with it. You know, it could turn a corner much like last year after Iowa started out rough, but they found a way to pull it together. Now Iowa has a chance to be up to a 3 seed in the Big Ten tournament. They're 4-1 in their last 5 games, playing their best basketball of this season. I want to get your thoughts on this, Sean, but I also want to throw in a very interesting tidbit from Big Ten Network analyst Rafael Davis, is the fact that he said Iowa has the best player leadership in the Big Ten Conference. And you think about how many big-time leaders Iowa lost last year from, you know, Keegan Murray, from, you know, Connor McCaffrey. I mean, Iowa just entered this season with a leadership void. We had thoughts about who could step up, and guys have stepped up, but I thought that was a pretty telling comment. But, yeah, Iowa now is in the first 4 out, according to Joe Lunardi, and the season's kind of riding on Sunday, Sean, if they make the NCAA tournament or not.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the leadership thing that you brought up, I mean, that was a big talking point when Iowa was losing those games. He's like, where is the leadership going to come from? Who is going to supply that? And they've really started to figure that out. I mean, Peyton Sanford obviously comes to mind. He's probably the most vocal leader on the team. But, you know, there are other guys that are pretty, you know, maybe not as vocal leaders that, you know, have played a really big role. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned a 3 seed for this Iowa team. It's possible, but it's like a 5% chance right now. Most of the percent chances are between the 5 and 7 seed line, which you avoid the first day, which is really big, because there was a point in the season where we were kind of like, okay, are they going to have a bye in the Big Ten tournament? And now that you get that bye, you're looking potentially at a matchup. I think it was, I know Northwestern would be in the quarterfinals, and then I believe it would be Penn State and one other team. I can't remember. It might be Michigan, that you would play the winner of that game. So likely Penn State, which, I mean, would be a tough matchup, but Iowa has proven that they can beat the Nittany Lions. But yeah, I mean, the game against Northwestern, granted you have two starters for Northwestern who are out. Ty Berry's out for the rest of the year. Ryan Langbord is out for, I think, a couple more games. Maybe, I mean, he was hit or miss going into Saturday's game. But the fact that you go to Welsh Ryan Arena and win that game in that atmosphere and do it the way that you do it. I mean, you look at some of those losses from previously year. What was one thing that Iowa didn't do? They weren't able to close down the stretch. I think in this game they hit seven of their last eight shots or six of their last seven shots and were able to make those big plays down the stretch. And, you know, that's obviously production. That's obviously, you know, putting guys in the right spot, but that's also leadership and that's also maturity, because when the stakes are highest and you're able to make those plays, that says a lot about you and your team and, you know, what kind of belief you have in each other. And, you know, there were a lot of points earlier in the season where this team just did not look like a well, you know, chemistry unit. There were times where, you know, the offense wasn't clicking and, you know, the defense was bad. Communication was bad. There was a lot of one-on-one basketball. But I think a lot of this, you know, leadership, I think the one stat that really comes to mind too is the 25 assists on 33 made baskets. That's a big, big thing.
Yeah.
That's ball movement. That's understanding each other. That's chemistry. That says a lot about that win on Saturday.
Peyton Samford just continues to impress the hell out of me, Sean, because that's a guy who, again, you talk about what happened against Maryland. He took full accountability for the defensive breakdown. I thought he took a lot of unwarranted criticism because I think there's a lot of pent up frustration from the year about that when that happened. But Peyton Samford's just playing his best basketball, and it's not surprising to see him go up the NBA draft radars, because I mean, I hinted to it this summer. I talked to a couple NBA scouts who said they were going to keep their eye on him. Right. And I think he's continued to shine. He put the first triple double in Iowa men's basketball history, which I think surprised every media member when you think about some of the great players that have come through the University of Iowa. But Peyton Samford, what's really impressed me about him, Sean, is everybody will talk about his shooting ability, right? I think he's gotten better at creating off the dribble. I think he's become a more aggressive rebounder. He's not a good defender, but the effort's there. And I think that at least says a lot about him. I think he really tries hard on defense. His playmaking ability has just skyrocketed here over the past year. Like, his ability to find the open man, make some of those difficult bounce passes, and look for opportunities to get his teammates the ball. That's been really impressive, I think, especially over the past month. Now, Peyton will not take a lot of credit for that. He just says he gives the ball to Josh Dix, and Josh Dix just does not miss a shot. I think he's 35 of 52 from the field over the last five games. And Josh Dix also is a guy that wins you games in March. He wins you tournament games. Having that sort of player that has a lethal mid-range, who's becoming a more confident three-point shooter, I think he needs to continue to become a better rebounder a little bit. But his on-ball defense on the perimeter has been really good. I think he's Iowa's best perimeter defender. He's becoming aggressive offensively, and he's striking me as a guy who's going to be an all-Big Ten guard next year. I've been really impressed with the way that his career's unfolded this early. And I know I hate continuing to bring up that devastating injury he had to end his high school career, but when you think about that, that was 2 years ago. And now this guy's putting up back-to-back 20-point performances in Big Ten play. It really is incredible to watch what he's done. I think you need to give Matt Gaetens a lot of credit for that. I think you need to give Frey McCaffrey a lot of credit for that. But seeing him understanding his role has been critical. And I think you kind of go up and down the list, Sean, who's continued to get better throughout the year. I think you can name most players on the list. Laji Dembele is another guy whose rebounding's gotten better. His offense is slowly progressing. His defense, I think he's one of Iowa's strongest interior defenders. I think his upside is incredibly high. So regardless of what happens on Sunday against Illinois, I think the pieces are there, that the foundation is going to be pretty bright for this team, regardless of what happens with Tony Perkins. But again, I've been really impressed with the way this team's rallied.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head there. And with Dix, the last – I just had it in front of me. The last three games, he is 9 of 15 on mid-range jumpers, which feels like it's a little – like I thought it'd be better, but he was 4 of 6 against Northwest. He was 4 of 6 against Northwestern and 4 of 5 of 3 against the Cats with 24 points. And yeah, I mean, I talked to an NBA scout after the game on Saturday. He texted me Sunday morning and he said that Josh Dix is a legitimate NBA draft prospect right now. Maybe not for this season, but for next season, he is a legitimate guy who could be a prospect. And I know a lot of people talked about Dix coming in and, you know, maybe being that CJ Frederick role where he can come in and, you know, space the floor and, you know, do that sort of thing. But, and he's done that obviously in the last couple of games in the last few months, but his deal too is like, he's a creator. He does a little bit of everything well. And that's one thing that we constantly heard about throughout the offseason is that Dix just does a lot of the little things that, you know, helps his team winning ball games. And, you know, that's what we've seen in the last few games. And obviously what he's been able to do shooting the ball wise has added just a whole nother element to this team. And, you know, I was in Omaha this weekend at the Creighton game, sitting next to my dad, who's a big Indiana fan. And Indiana's struggle this year is they can't shoot the basketball. And as cliche as it sounds, watching Creighton play basketball, my dad was like, it's amazing how much things open up on the court when you can hit the three. And I mean, it's a pretty like basic thing to say, but it's so true. And I think that's one thing that has been really valuable with Josh Dix, because you look at this Iowa team throughout the year, they're not shooting the three as much as they have in past years. They are – this Iowa team is 334th in point distribution from three-point land, which is crazy to think about, especially with how much this team and Fran McCaffrey's team has shot threes in the past. So they're not getting as many threes. They're not shooting as many threes. You had someone like Josh Dix who can hit threes alongside Peyton Sanford consistently, and you're talking about your offense just becomes that much more dynamic. And I mean, yeah, it's weird to think about those stats, because you look back at some of the games earlier in the regular season where they were putting up 25 threes and only making like 4 of them. And then, you know, as of late, they've really kind of, especially in conference play, they've kind of switched that up a little bit where they're more focused on, you know, getting drives, getting to the basket, stuff like that, and letting Peyton Sanford shoot from three, occasionally Patrick McCaffrey. But if you have a guy like Josh Dix who can take efficient shots, and, you know, if you have one more floor spacer on the court at all times, that just makes your offense that much better. And that is huge for this team.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I thought their three-point shooting would be a little bit better, but it was also a big question mark coming into the year. I mean, we knew they had Peyton Sanford, and Peyton Sanford's continued to progress as an all-around player. And I could be off. I probably am. But, you know, I watch Peyton Sanford, the way he goes off those screens, takes those contested three-point shots, makes it, draws fouls on the perimeter. I always kind of compared at least that part of his game to Nick Stauskas. Nick Stauskas was a little bit better at being more of a guard and getting into the paint a little bit and finishing at the rim creatively than Peyton. But as far as like the concepts with him coming off a double screen, curl cutting, mid-range jumpers, like that has been very reminiscent to me. And that's something that a couple NBA scouts also told me about Peyton Sanford's game. But, you know, it is interesting because I feel like this Iowa team is an NCAA caliber team at this point. But then you mentioned it earlier about executing down the stretch of games. I mean, if you look down the list of games this season, Sean, I mean, they've been in almost every single game outside the first, the December games. And I think the one returning game when they just started back up after that mini non-conference break, like Iowa's been in a lot of these road matchups. They've been in these games, but then you look at the last 5 to 6 minutes, they just cannot execute on either end of the court. But something that's also been really impressive to me about this team, I think they've gotten a lot smarter about understanding when to go in transition, when to attack, and when to run their half-court sets. Because I think at times this season when they got down the stretch of those games, they would just turn the ball over, and I think it would affect their defense. I think they've done a better job of rotating. I think they've done better defensive fundamentals over the past couple of weeks, which has allowed them to surge. And, you know, Iowa players have said it, Fran has said it, when they generate stops and they get out in transition, it just makes their offense that much more confident because they know they can stop them at the other end of the court. And I think Iowa's done a better job of forcing teams, hey, we're going to hold them to no field goals for the next 3 or 4 minutes, which does not sound like a terribly long time when you look at some of the other styles that teams play around the country. But that's major for Iowa, especially if they're executing on the other end. I mean, Iowa's the team that's capable of going on a 7-0 run, 8-0 run in a minute, 4 seconds, because that's the sort of tempo that they play. So obviously, I still think there's a long way to go. I would like to see Owen Freeman continue to kind of get back to where he was at maybe 3 weeks to a month ago. I think he's hitting that, I don't want to say a freshman wall, because that's not fair. I think he is the freshman of the year in the Big Ten still. But there have been a couple instances over the past few games where you just look at him and you say, oh, and that's a frustration foul. You can't, with the way that they're calling against you, you cannot afford to just commit a silly foul like that. And I think that's what Fran and Tristan Spurlock and those guys have been trying to tell him, is you can't get frustrated in the course of the game because we're better with you in the game, especially at rim protecting, especially rebounding. But I also want to give Owen Freeman this. I think he's been incredibly intelligent about when to attack the basket, when to take those shots, and when to kick out for open teammates and kind of reset the offense. Because as a freshman, I think it's easy to try too hard and get wrapped up in that and care about your stats. Owen Freeman does not strike me as that type of player, and I think his play has backed him up.
Yeah, he's not that type of player at all. And, you know, he's probably going to be a 3-4 year guy that, you know, is going to be the face of the program for the next couple of years. And, you know, that was one really positive takeaway I felt like throughout this season was the emergence of Owen Freeman. And I think people were really, you know, kind of focusing on that. But to see Josh Dix, you know, step up, to see Peyton Sanford be, you know, that shot maker that we knew he was capable of being, seeing some of these other freshmen make those positive leaps is, you know, also added to the magnitude of this season and what it could potentially become if I was able to make it to an NCAA tournament, which almost felt like a 0% chance, maybe like a 1% chance a couple weeks ago. Right now, this is from Delphi Bracketology. There are, as of now, today, there are 10 teams competing for 5 spots. Those 10 teams are Villanova, St. John's, Utah, Iowa, Seton Hall, New Mexico, Texas A&M, Memphis, Virginia, Drake. And if you're Iowa, I mean, I was looking at Bart Torvik last night. If you're Iowa, if you beat Illinois on Saturday, or is that that's Sunday, isn't it?
Sunday.
Yeah, if you beat Illinois on Sunday, your chances of making the tournament per Torvik go up to like 65.3% or something like that. Right now they're at 40. And that's not a perfect science because obviously you never know what the selection committee is going to do in terms of, you know, who else wins. Like, that's just if Iowa wins. So, you know, maybe there are teams that, you know, that are also on the bubble that end up winning, that, you know, that win could potentially lower Iowa's chances. Maybe there's teams that lose and that increases Iowa's chances. But if you're Iowa, I think you have put yourself in position enough to just rely on yourself winning and not have to rely on other teams losing. I mean, it would definitely help, but I think you put yourself in a good spot right now. And if you can get that draw with Northwestern potentially as a 3 seed in the Big Ten tournament, you beat Illinois on Sunday, you have that draw in the Big Ten tournament. I mean, you gotta like your chances. Like, I think you have more. I think you have a 70% chance at that point if you can win 3 of the next 4 games.
Yeah,
maybe more, because I mean that's another quadrant one win if you play Northwestern. Granted, it could all change, but still, like, I think you have to like that.
We also have to see if Minnesota goes back to being a quad one. I think that's going to be, you know, that could be a big deal too, because I think that slipped down to a quad two over the past couple of days. But if that gets back up to a quad one, then that's just another resume builder on top of that as well. So that'll be something to pay attention to. Tony Perkins. Outstanding distribution the other day, 14 assists. he's become a point guard, in my opinion. He's just improved his passing that much. I think he's a willing passer. I think he's turned into, quite frankly, a good passer. That play he had when he drove in, now he might have gotten away with a travel. But he did find Patrick McCaffrey in the corner for three, and Patrick did end up hitting another big shot. But Tony Perkins' shooting needs to get back to what it was in the late part of January and the early part of February. From the last couple of games, 4-14, 3-4, 5-14, 3-9, 6-16, 3-13. That's his shooting in the past six games. Now, Iowa's offense hasn't really suffered too much. They've been winning games. Josh Dix has stepped up, Peyton Sanford. Ben Cricky has struggled a little bit, but had a nice second half bounce back in Iowa's last game. But they need Tony Perkins to be the Tony Perkins that they had a month ago, 5 weeks ago, because that's what's going to help carry Iowa to get to where they want to go. They need a primetime Tony Perkins game on Sunday against Illinois. I think he's going to come out very motivated. I think he's going to come out in attack mode. But I also don't think Illinois is just going to roll over and die. I think that they're incredibly motivated to end Iowa's season, quote unquote, barring a Big Ten tournament run. But Tony Perkins, if Iowa is going to have a shot at doing what it wants to do, all the pieces that have sort of emerged here over the past 5 to 6 games are going to have to combine with a good Tony Perkins and an Owen Freeman that plays more than 23, 24 minutes and is not limited with foul trouble. So I'm looking for Tony to attack mid-range. I'm looking at Tony to become a good distributor. I'm looking to see how aggressive Tony Perkins will be on the glass, because I think when he gets rebounds and just does something to contribute statistically, I think that just propels his confidence to a whole new level. I mean, we've seen him struggle from the field, but he's still an aggressive rebounder, which leads him to being a better defender, which leads him to passing better. Like, all of these things just have sort of stacked on top of one another. So I'd like to see Tony Perkins get back to who he was a month ago. And again, I think you look at Terrence Shannon, you look at those Illinois guys, Coleman Hawkins, they're going to be motivated to continue to try to prove to people that they are capable of being a Final Four team, because there are still a lot of outside people and national pundits that believe if Illinois can piece things together, that they can make a deep run in March.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa has to find a way to guard Coleman Hawkins right from the jump, because that matchup for Hawkins was one that was really ideal for him, because he's more of a perimeter type guy who, or five, that can put the ball on the deck, you know, make plays off the dribble, make plays off the secondary dribble, pick and pop, those types of things. Owen Freeman can guard that, but that also puts him in danger for potentially drawing fouls. Ben Cricky, you know, that was not his matchup. And I think Illinois really exposed Iowa's fast break defense in certain points of the game too, that, you know, could have been, you know, disrupted, or, you know, could have been maybe changed by the Iowa staff, or maybe adjustments made. And I also thought that Illinois' defense, I mean, they really showed what they were capable of down the stretch, because that was another one of those games where Iowa was really silent down the stretch and Illinois was able to attack. And that goes back to the assist numbers too. Like, when this Iowa team is getting those hot assist numbers, then that generally equals a lot more success. And then, you know, later on in the game, Illinois was really able to get up in the grill of Iowa defensively and, you know, force those uncomfortable situations that ultimately led to Illinois getting out to a bigger lead. So it's going to be one of those games where you got to put together a 40 minute performance. You can't have some of these lapses. Like, I thought against Northwestern, they did a good job. It felt like maybe being a 40 point performance. The win against Michigan State, I thought they did a good job of making it a 40 point or 40 minute performance. Wisconsin, you know, not as much, but that was still a big win where, you know, you did enough to get that win. But against Illinois, that's one of those teams that, you know, you got to put together for 40 minutes, because we saw what happened when Iowa didn't put it together for 40 minutes and it came at one of the worst times possible. So, yeah, I mean, before we kind of transition into the women's game, Sunday is huge. There's no doubt about it. You know, those teams that I mentioned before, those are going to be the ones to watch this week, because, I mean, Drake's playing in the Valley tournament. The other high major
Tucker DeVries is a stud too, man. He's been killing it lately. He's been unbelievable numbers wise.
He's a good player, but they're ones to watch. I think I saw that if Iowa wins against Illinois right now, that they go up to the first team out on Bart Torvik, even though they give him a 70% chance of making the tournament. And that's with no help. Like, you know, it's kind of just if they win. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be important to – yes, it's key. The first thing is for Iowa to win, but if you want to feel a lot better about it, you got to see some of these teams lose this week. So those are the ones to pay attention to right now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
No doubt. And we'll have preview coverage at HawkeyeInsider.com. Well, let's transition to women's basketball, Sean, because I will say I've been a part of a lot of special games since I started covering this team. Women's basketball championship, football conference championships, countless great games in Kinnick Stadium. Sunday might have been the loudest atmosphere I've ever been a part of. It was absolutely unbelievable from the jump. I mean, you think about, I just wrote a story on this morning, but you think about Caitlin Clark when she first got to Iowa, right? COVID season probably helped keep her name a little bit more under the national radar because, you know, people were just in a completely different mind space at the time. She goes from hitting a game winner against Iowa State, hyping up a cardboard cutout of her dog, right? I mean, there's only cardboard cutouts in the media and like a little bit of family there, to Travis Scott sitting courtside, to Lynette Woodard being there, to Maya Moore, Caitlin Clark's idol that inspired her to play basketball, being there. You think about all these big names, Sue Bird, not there yesterday, but had been there this season. Jason Sudeikis, Ted Lasso has been there, right? It's been unbelievable to watch, but yesterday just seemed it was an all-time special atmosphere, and I think everybody recognized it. And this was one of the first times maybe this has happened in my entire journalistic career, but the entire first quarter, I don't remember at all because it felt like it was more of a spectacle than it was a basketball game. It felt like a tourist attraction, not us watching the Iowa women face off against the number two team in the country. And that's probably the ultimate testament I can give to the atmosphere that was there yesterday. But, you know, Caitlin Clark does her thing, passes Pistol Pete Maravich for most points in a major, you know, in major college basketball, men's or women's, 35 points, you know, 9 assists, 6 rebounds, another special game for her. Unfortunately, Molly Davis, prognosis is not good. There's no official word, but based on yesterday, I will be shocked if she returns. And that's a really big loss for Iowa. considering that was probably the only other person on this roster that was capable of running the true point guard spot, and that allowed Caitlin Clark to move off the ball. So I think that that's going to be a big deal there. But it was a special atmosphere. It was a special event, the most expensive women's basketball game at any level on record. Nolan Ryan also being there, I should probably mention him before I get a bunch of people in my mentions about that. But it really proved to see how far women's basketball has come and how Iowa and Caitlin Clark have kind of been on the forefront of it. I mean, it really was indescribable, Sean. Like I said, I blacked out in the first quarter. It just felt like a spectacle night in a basketball game.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like an awesome atmosphere. I wasn't able to take it all in because I was driving back from Omaha with my family. But, yeah, I mean, it really – I mean, I know we talked about it on the last podcast a little bit when Caitlin declared for the draft, but it's crazy because, you know, we have these memories of like, for me, women's basketball, like, kind of really – became a lot more relevant, I think, or, you know, a lot more like, you know, you hear about some of these names and, you know, you watch it like more around NCAA tournament time rather than, you know, during the regular season. And you hear about UConn, you hear about Maya Moore, Breonna Stewart, you know, Brittany Griner, obviously at Baylor, Candace Parker. I think Candace Parker was probably the first, you know, like superstar I ever really watched in the women's game. But it feels like Caitlin Clark is kind of just, I don't know if it's social media, I don't know if it's NIL, like, she just feels like on a totally different planet than anyone else. And it feels, it's really cool, like, you know, I don't have kids, obviously, but to see, like, to read some of these things about what parents think about Caitlin and, you know, the role model that she is and for like the kids and, you know, how much they just look forward to watching her and, you know, how it's like a spectacle, like watching her and how much the kids love watching her and, you know, kind of just all that, like, is really cool because, you know, you kind of forget that, like, when you get older, you kind of forget what it's like to look up to someone in a way and, you know, kind of like have a role model. And to see, like, obviously Caitlin's a fantastic basketball player, but to see what she has done for like a lot of girls across the country and, you know, just being a role model, like, that's one of the coolest things, I think, because, you know, you have something to chase, you have something to be like, you have something to aspire to be. And, you know, it just raised the popularity of the game. Like, she is an icon. She is probably the most, like we said, like, probably the most iconic college athlete since Johnny Manziel, like, Jimmer Fredette, like, you know, those types of guys. I'm definitely missing a couple. Like, those types of guys. Like, she is up there with those, with that group in terms of, you know, just being an icon in the college game and being the face of the game. It's awesome to see.
I mean, I think she's transcended the sport without doubt. I mean, you think about what Tiger Woods did to golf. Think about what Michael Jordan did in the NBA. As crazy as it is, this is the same exact thing. There's no surprise she's saying viewership records across the board. She's bringing in global superstar musicians to sit courtside. Like, this is not normal. And I think Iowans take a special value to it because she's from Des Moines. She chose to stay home. And he talked about how she's a role model for Lalo boys and girls. It was really cool to see. I don't know if you saw the video of ESPN was interviewing her and they brought out Maya Moore. Caitlin literally screamed. And she kind of reverted to being back that little girl when she retold the story about she got to hug Maya Moore but didn't get her autograph or a picture, but she got to hug her and how that kind of inspired her to be who she is now. And when she had that little yelp or scream or whatever you want to call it, you could just see that same little girl that she once was come back into fruition for a split second because she had no idea Maya Moore was going to be there and she had not seen Maya Moore since that moment. So I thought that was a really, really cool thing. And I think those type of things help Caitlin understand the perspective and the power and the influence that she has. And I think that's what's really allowed her to sort of step into that iconic, transcendent role that she has. But it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this team. I want to get into the basketball side of it a little bit, Sean, but Gabby Marshall seems like she's following the same script as last year. She had as a struggles for most of the last month. Comes up big in the last two regular season games. Hits four threes yesterday. Obviously, Iowa without Molly Davis, assuming she's out for the year. Huge loss. But Kylie Fearbox played outstanding, I think, over the past couple of weeks as well. I mean, she had four steals yesterday, had a couple of big buckets, has been hitting three-pointers. She's been locked in defensively, really locked in. I think if she can bring that to the table, hit two or three three-pointers, like the Iowa team that showed up yesterday against Ohio State, that's the team that's capable of making the Final Four again. There's been games this season, like if they show up like the way they did against Indiana, that's a team that gets bounced in the round of 32 or Sweet 16. The team that showed up yesterday makes the Final Four. Gabby Marshall hitting threes. Kate Martin being strong on the glass. Hannah Stolke playing with a lot of aggression and a big chip on her shoulder. And most importantly, with confidence, has 23 points and 9 rebounds. Because when you get contributions from Gabby Marshall, from Kylie Fearbach, when Hannah Stolke is holding down the middle, that takes so much pressure off of Caitlin Clark that she plays even more free and she doesn't have to force anything. Like, it just felt like a natural Caitlin Clark game. Iowa won by 10. But honestly, Sean, it felt like they won by 20 to 25. I mean, they just thoroughly dominated every aspect of the game. This is still an Ohio State team that's going to be a projected one seed in the NCAA tournament. But things are starting to turn the corner. And obviously, guard play wins you championships. And Caitlin Clark's obviously the best player in America. She's going to be the two-time National Player of the Year. I think you can make an argument for a three- or four-time discussion for another day. But if they carry the momentum that they got yesterday into the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament, this is a team that's 1,000% capable of going back to the Final Four for a second straight year.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about matchups. Matchups are going to be key. That's going to be a key thing in this tournament for Iowa. And yeah, I mean, if they can get hot and, you know, if they can play in the open court and, you know, the shots are falling, then, you know, this team is definitely more than capable of making that deep run. I'm interested to see how the Big Ten tournament shakes up. And, you know, I've heard a couple of things or a couple of people say that the women's one is probably going to be more entertaining than the men. And, you know, I think I tend to agree with that a little bit. I think Purdue is going to dominate the men's tournament and, you know, then lose in Sweet 16 or something. But like with this women's with the Big Ten women's tournament, it feels like any, or like Ohio State, like Iowa, like those are two Final Four capable teams for sure. But yeah, it's, I think this, the potential is there for this team to make that run and make a big run. And but with Molly Davis out, like, yeah, you said it, that's gonna be tough,
especially like I said, Caitlin not being able to play the two, and that's gonna be a big deal. Mm-hmm. But it'll be interesting too, and I just want to touch on this because ESPN put out their updated bracket for the women's tournament this morning. Sean, compared to the last bracket that came out, this plays a lot more into Iowa's hands. I mean, this bracket, the way it looks right now, that if this ends up being the draw, which it won't be, we all know there's going to be crazy things that happen, right? This would be such an ideal thing for Iowa. I mean, they get the one seed. They'd be a two seed, but UCLA would be the one seed. And I think outside of Ohio State, that's the one seed they could beat the most. Three seed would be Oregon State, which would be very interesting, but playing Oregon State in Portland would not be ideal because that's essentially going to be a home game. But I also tend to think that Iowa fans are saving up to go travel to a Sweet 16 or Elite Eight because Caitlin Clark, potential last game, right? But then you look at a little bit of the bracket as well. The number one overall seed, South Carolina, they have number three seed UConn in their region. And I'm never going to count out Gino Auriemma. Paige Beckers is still phenomenal. They have Leah Edwards. They could probably compete with some of the size of South Carolina. Stanford's on the other side of the bracket, and I think Stanford's a top two worst matchup for Iowa just because they have the great duo in the post with Cameron Brink, who's probably the best two-way player, post player in the last 10 to 15 years, with all due respect to Aaliyah Boston. LSU would be in that same region as Stanford. So Iowa's avoiding some of these teams, Sean, that I at least had, you know, circled on my list of, okay, this team would be a bad matchup for Iowa. There'd be a lot more storylines surrounding Iowa in this game. Like, these are not ideal matchups. Like, if Iowa finds a way to keep this two seed and stay out of South Carolina's and Stanford's region, I more than likely, and obviously LSU not being involved in their region, I'm very, very confident. Like, if Iowa continues to piece things together, like, I think they can make a run to the Final Four. And something I haven't even mentioned yet, this team has experience of what it's like to play with the big spotlight on them. Like, yes, Caitlin in Iowa is going to have pressure, but when haven't they been under pressure, played in front of big crowds all year? Compare that to some of these other teams. Like, Iowa's selling out every game. They're setting viewership records. They're still winning. And they have an experience of actually getting to the Final Four and the national championship game. And I don't think you can discount experience of what it's like to kind of go through that process and all the emotions that could probably play a hand in that. I hate to say it, Sean. I don't hate to say it, but I wasn't sold on Iowa being a Final Four team. But the more I kind of start to talk about it, if it shakes, the bracket shakes up, like, the more I'm pretty much believing Iowa is going to be a Final Four team.
Yeah, I mean, I think outside of this, what happened to Molly Davis, I think that game yesterday really makes you feel a little bit more confident when this team is playing at their best than, you know, we know what they're capable of. Obviously, that Indiana game was a little bit disheartening in a way, but, you know, that's going to happen at times. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see, you know, what kind of chip they get this weekend in Indy. Will be pretty interesting to see, you know, how the cards are kind of dealt for them with the tournament then too.
You know, the other thing I was thinking about too, before we wrap up this, Sean, is you think, I know it wasn't the second to last game this year, but when Iowa lost to Indiana, I think it kind of got Iowa's head right. Just as far as players only meeting, they kind of come together and say, hey, we got to help Caitlin. We want to make a run. We got to change some things up. We need to be on our game. I think Caitlin's played more free since she made the WNBA decision. But I also think back to last year when Iowa lost to Maryland, right? Costing the Big Ten tournament, I mean, costing the Big Ten regular season. But Gabby Marshall got her game going. And then what happened? Iowa goes and beats Indiana on a buzzer beater. And that loss at Maryland, I think, really, really set in a reality of Iowa just needed to clean up some things and really fully lock into what's happening because they have an opportunity. So the more I look at the stats, the more I look at the adversity, the more I look at all this, this is almost a carbon copy of what happened last year. Now, obviously, we need to see what happens in the Big Ten tournament. But leading up to the Big Ten tournament, there's a lot of similar storylines that I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. So I will be in Minneapolis having on-site coverage of the Iowa Women's Tournament this week. We'll obviously see what happens with Iowa, Illinois on Sunday, but there's no doubt that there's going to be a lot to talk about, a lot of storylines. So stay locked in to HawkeyeInsider.com. Sean, any other final thoughts about men or women's team before we wrap this up?
No, I might have something later today on, you know, a couple of thoughts on the men's team and the women's team too, but I posted something yesterday that I think would be worth reading about, you know, what some NBA scouts think of a few of the guys on Iowa's current roster, including Peyton Sanford, who's getting a lot of second round buzz. And then Josh Dix, as I mentioned before, and then, you know, an interesting comment on Tony Perkins too. So if you're a VIP sub, look, make sure you read that because I think it's well worth your time.
All right. So David Eichel, Sean Bock, follow us on Twitter at David Eichel, at SBock247, at Hawkeyes on 247, and stay locked in to HawkeyeInsider.com for the most in-depth analysis of your Iowa Hawkeyes.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.